loud and clear.
From the studios of Radio Sputnik in downtown Washington, D.C., it's Loud and Clear. We take you inside the news 5 days a week. It's happening, and it's happening now. I'm Brian Becker, and I'm joined in studio by co-host John Kiriakou. In our first hour, we take a look at two big stories. First, Donald Trump gave an interview with Leslie Stahl yesterday. We're going to take a look at that wide-ranging interview. We're going to talk about what Donald Trump said, what Leslie Stahl said, and what she didn't say. We're going to try to make heads and tails out of it. And then, because it's Monday, we'll talk about technology. We have a weekly half-hour segment called Technology Rules with Chris Garofa, a weekly guide on how monopoly corporations and the national surveillance state are threatening cherished freedom, civil rights, and civil liberties.
But before we get to those stories, we'll go over today's headlines, including five that we'll cover in depth in the second hour. First, the government of Ecuador yesterday reinstated internet connectivity for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who has been in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for the past 6 years. Assange had his internet and visitors cut off in March after he allegedly commented on Spanish elections in violation of an agreement with the Ecuadorians. Next, the international investigation into the disappearance and apparent murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi continues. Turkish authorities say they are positive that Khashoggi was tortured, murdered, and dismembered inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, and they have the video to prove it. Meanwhile, dozens of major business leaders are withdrawing from an upcoming business conference in Saudi Arabia. It's being called Davos in the Desert, in protest of the murder. Then, political observers are calling this weekend's elections in the southern German state of Bavaria a political earthquake, as Chancellor Angela Merkel's coalition partners were walloped, while the Green Party and the far-right Alternative for Germany increased their share of the vote dramatically. In fact, the Social Democratic Party, one of the coalition partners, garnered fewer votes than the neo-Nazis did. And then the Trump administration has ordered an obscure government agency, the Chemical Safety and Hazard Investigations Board, to gut environmental regulations related to chemical and oil pipeline safety. Instead of mandatory regulations designed to keep workers and the public safe, those regulations will become voluntary suggestions. And finally, today we continue our segment, Education for Liberation, with Bill Ayers, where Bill helps us look at the state of education across the country. What's happening in our schools, colleges, and universities, and what impact does it have on the world around us? And in other headlines, the after effects of Hurricane Michael are continuing to cause havoc in the panhandle of Florida, where President Trump and First Lady Melania visited today. So far, Michael has caused at least 18 deaths in four states, and the hurricane hit Florida with 155 mile-per-hour winds. The deadline for insurgents to leave the demilitarized zone in Syria has passed, but not all fighters have left, particularly members of Al-Qaeda's former affiliate in the country. The Russian media is reporting that some have left, but activists in the area are saying that no one has gone. The zone was created as a result of a compromise between the Russian and Turkish governments. The U.S. budget deficit skyrocketed by $113 billion in the 2018 fiscal year, according to an announcement by the Treasury Department. The budget deficit now stands at $779 billion, the highest in 6 years. The increase in the deficit is in large part due to tax cuts and increased military spending. The announcement of a new Israeli settlement in the city of Hebron is causing intense controversy. While the planned settlement will consist of just 31 homes, it has a major political impact due to the importance of Hebron, one of the largest cities in the West Bank. Israeli settlement construction is widely condemned around the world as a violation of international law. Those are today's headlines. You're listening to Loud and Clear.
Loud and Clear.
Now we turn to Donald Trump. Donald Trump gave a wide-ranging and at sometimes surprising, maybe shocking interview that was broadcast on 60 Minutes yesterday. During the course of the interview, the president talked to journalist Leslie Stahl about issues as diverse as climate change, China, North Korea, trade, and Russia. He indirectly threatened the job of Defense Secretary James Mattis and said that the European Union was one of the greatest threats facing the United States. We are joined from New York by Jim Cavanaugh. Jim is the editor of thepolemicist.net. And we're joined from Philadelphia by Dave Lindorf. Dave is an investigative reporter and founder of This Can't Be Happening, as well as a columnist for Counterpunch and a contributor to Businessweek, The Nation Extra, and Salon.com. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Jim Kavanaugh, what'd you think? What'd you think of that interview?
Well, you know, I'm going to say, I don't know actually who was worse, frankly, Leslie Stahl or Donald Trump. And to me, the interview epitomizes everything that's wrong with the political dialogue in the United States. Trump is, of course, all over the place, saying ridiculous things, swinging from one thing to another, and interrupting her and not letting her get a lot of questions out coherently. On the other hand, you know, she's represents a discourse which is very selectively concerned about certain things, which lets him get away with certain things. This thing starts out about the Khashoggi killing, okay, which of course is something that's horrible and everybody should be outraged about it. But, you know, again, 60 Minutes and CBS, you know, the Saudis have been killing thousands of Yemenis for years now with American help. The Palestinians are getting killed 200, 7, 6, and 7 a day by methodical murdering by the Israelis. There are no calls for sanctions on that and no sanctimonious outrage from CBS. So, you know, it's one of these things which really there was a tweet about the Khashoggi thing. You know, please don't murder anybody I might have dinner party with, be at a dinner party with, you know. So there's that. And then on the economy, she gave him all kinds of credit for the economy. Well, you're proud of the economy and rightly so, you know, because job unemployment is down, the stock market is up. But, you know, this is, and then she went, she transitioned right into, but people are, it's a very divisive country and people are angry about things and Kavanaugh confirmation, et cetera. But, you know, people are angry about the economy really, because even though unemployment is down, everybody knows these aren't real jobs anymore. They're gigs. There's no economic security with these jobs. And they're lower paying jobs and they're temporary jobs and all kinds of things. So she let him get away with that. So there's a kind of back and forth here that annoyed me entirely. You know, I was annoyed with his answers and with her questions.
Jim Kavanaugh, you know, Trump has done everything to deregulate every industry and to let every polluter pollute more. In the interview yesterday, he said, I think something's happening. Something's changing. This is about the environment. And it'll change back again. I don't think it's a hoax. I think there probably is a difference, but I don't know that it's man-made. We have scientists that disagree with that. Now, here's an issue that the whole world is focused on, because if climate change is happening, and of course it is, if the scientific community is, in fact, almost at a complete consensus, which it is, if there's no remediation of high temperatures and other pollutants, we're reaching a tipping point, according to this UN study based on 6,000 scientific interviews. And here you have the leader of the most powerful country and the second biggest emitter of carbon saying, well, I don't know, it's not a hoax, but it's happening. Maybe there's some difference. He's noticing a change, perhaps seasonally or something. It's kind of profoundly ignorant and weird, and at the same time a shield, because everything Trump is doing is to accelerate climate change, including getting out of that basically minimalist treaty, the Paris Climate Treaty. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I like to see that in the context of a general ecological destruction that's going on. And this is where, you know, again, he should be challenged on deregulation in a broad sense. You know, I mean, what's happening to the climate and what's happening to the ecology of the world and the country, deregulating systems that pollute water supplies and pollute the air. This is something that's been a great, well, insofar as it's happened, you know, this is one of the advances since the 70s, where there were real environmental concern. And now you've got the industries, the extractive industries, which are pressing for all kinds of rollbacks of those things and putting people in charge of the EPA who are, you know, coal mining people. And this is something that's going to, again, have a profound effect on people's lives and you know, cause health problems and cause just the destruction of the quality of life throughout the country. So this should be something, the tax cuts, the deregulation specifically in this context, should be something that was challenged across the board, not just because of the larger issue of climate change and what's happening to the, you know, the apocalyptic scenario of the planet, but we have, you know, polluted oceans, red tide in
Florida, West Florida,
in the Gulf. This is because of agricultural waste runoffs. The pig farms we saw in North Carolina, you know, millions of tons of factory farming, agricultural waste. These are huge problems for the country. The fact that we no longer can dump a lot of our garbage in China anymore because they're not going to let it in. You know, we have to start thinking for all kinds of reasons about how we're going to restructure society in a way that's more healthy and sustainable for everybody. And that requires, as that report said about climate change, but about a lot of other things, it requires a kind of revolutionary transformation of our whole thinking about how we produce and consume things in a society. And that cannot be done outside the context, guess what, of a planned economy in some way. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that you have to confront in all kinds of ways. And it was interesting to me when he said, I'm very proud of my, look at all the tax cuts I did, look at all the deregulation I did. Leslie Saul switched right away to, oh, what about North Korea?
Yeah. John, when we talk to Walter and Nicole and the other people who are part of the Loud and Clear team, everybody agreed with Jim Kavanaugh's assessment. It was hard to know who was worse in that interview.
You know, 60 Minutes tends to do that. They're almost apologists for whoever happens to be in office.
Yeah, or attacking Trump for Russia and letting it go, like when he's talking about deregulations. And of course, we've heard everything now, even in recent days and weeks from the United Nations scientific report, that the world may be truly at a tipping point, that this is something of extreme urgency. But let's move on now and talk about why you're so nice to Kim Jong-un or why you're so nice to Vladimir Putin.
She spent more time on that question. Why did you say you love Kim Jong-un than she spent on trade with the European Union?
Yeah, well, let's bring Dave Lindorf into the discussion. Dave Lindorf joins us from Philadelphia. Dave is an investigative reporter and a founder of This Can't Be Happening, as well as a columnist for Counterpunch and a contributor to Businessweek, The Nation, Extra, and Salon.com. And we are also joined by Jim Kavanaugh, editor of thepolemicist.net. Dave Lindorf, before I ask you a question, I want to play a sound clip from yesterday's interview with Donald Trump, Leslie Stahl and Donald Trump, and then get your comment. This is about Trump talking about the European Union, which he, I think, is proclaiming as one of the greatest threats that exist to the United States, which is probably quite a surprise to the European Union. Anyway, let's listen to this clip and then we'll get your take.
You have also slapped some tariffs on our allies.
Well, I mean, what's an ally? We have wonderful relationships with a lot of people, but nobody treats us much worse than the European Union. The European Union was formed in order to take advantage of us on trade, and that's what they've done.
Dave, European Union was formed to take advantage of the United States. True, not true? Anyway, what's it mean politically?
Well, it's totally absurd. I mean, the European Union was long in being formed. It was a sort of a post-war project that started out with the EEC, common market, you know, and advanced to the European Union with a bit more integration with, you know, common borders and, you know, no customs, at least for those countries that signed the treaty. And the project was aimed at, you know, primarily, you know, there was a Cold War aspect to it, certainly. It was encouraged by the U.S. because it was seen as, you know, building a stronger resistance to the old Soviet Union. But it was, so it had a Cold War component, but it also came out of a historic sense that Europe had all these wars that its member states fought with each other, and that by bringing them into some kind of economic union, that kind of horrendous scenario would be more likely to be avoided in the future. So it's a long-term prospect, and it had nothing to do in that. The Cold War part had to do with the U.S., which was encouraging it, not opposing it. And then this other aspect was pretty much a European aspect, which they wanted to avoid conflict among themselves in the future.
I want to say something else about that. I think the European Union was also formed in order to try and marginalize the power of labor in Europe and to concentrate the power of capital over labor in Europe and to create institutions which would sideline the working class political organizations in the European countries.
That's very true also, Jim. Because what it did is it created this huge bureaucracy with a lot of power that was extra parliamentary and that overruled or took away authority from the democratic governments of, you know, these various countries where labor had a chance to take power.
I agree with both of what you're saying. I don't want to spend too much time on the European Union, but more about the fact that Donald Trump has adopted an antagonistic attitude to the European countries who, you know, they were both friend and foe alike, both Germany, the foe, and the friends in continental Europe, and of course the UK, were rehabilitated economically after World War II, forged into an anti-Soviet united front. And part of the quid pro quo was all of them would function as basically junior partners for the United States, but all of them would have access to a larger part of the world market, so it wouldn't be like a repeat after World
War
One.
That's it.
Right?
That was the deal.
So it was a world order that the United States created. I want to avoid a third world war, which each time there was a world war, there would be like new revolutions in Russia or in China or different parts of the world. The U.S. wanted stability for the capitalist world, and it integrated them into this world order. And of course, yes, they did have access to some markets, including some access to some U.S. markets. Trump wants to undo that. It seems to me that he's pursuing a different path. Anyway, let's go on to another subject. We have another audio clip. This one, of course, goes back to, and again, where Dave, you missed the early part of the discussion where Jim Kavanaugh couldn't decide whether Leslie Stahl or Donald Trump was actually worse in the interview, and we agreed with Jim. Let's listen to this exchange between Stahl and Trump yesterday about Russia.
People don't understand why you never have a harsh word for Vladimir Putin.
Okay, you ready?
I don't understand.
You don't know what I talked about with Putin in the meeting prior to the press conference?
No, I mean publicly. You never say anything harsh about him publicly.
Excuse me, I didn't? I'm the one that gave Ukraine offensive weapons and tank killers. Obama didn't. You know what he sent? He sent pillows and blankets. I'm the one, and he's the one that gave away a part of Ukraine, where Russia now has this submarine.
I mean him personally. Vladimir Putin.
I think I'm very tough with him personally. I had a meeting with him, the two of us.
Yeah.
It was a very tough meeting, and it was a very good meeting.
Do you agree that Vladimir Putin is involved in assassinations, in poisonings?
Probably he is, yeah. Probably. I mean, I don't...
Probably?
Probably, but I rely on them. It's not in our country.
Okay, why not? They shouldn't do it. This is a terrible thing.
Of course
instead,
they shouldn't do it.
Do you believe that the Russians interfered in the 2016 campaign, election?
They meddled, but I think China meddled too.
But
and
why
I think
do you
other
say
countries,
China meddled too?
And you
too?
Want to know something
why
else?
Do you say China? Why don't you just
let me
say
ask
the
you.
Russians meddled?
Because I think China meddled also. And I think, frankly, China...
This
is a bigger problem.
You're diverting the whole Russian
I'm
thing.
I'm not doing
you
anything.
Are,
I'm
are.
Saying Russia, but I'm also saying China.
Wow.
It's wow.
It is pretty hard to say who's worse.
Wow.
Okay, Jim Kavanaugh, you get the first take at that one. Go ahead.
It's interesting that he says, you know, I think Russia meddled, but China did too, and other countries. And then it kind of got garbled there. I was wondering where he was going with those other countries.
He wasn't going to mention Israel, which actually truly did meddle.
Or the United States, which has meddles all the time.
Or Saudi Arabia. Yeah, the United States. Go ahead, Jim.
And the idea that Obama gave away part of the Ukraine, I mean, and that he didn't give them anything but blankets and pillows, rather than he gave them weapons, not quite the heavy weapons that Trump did. But Trump is right. You know, you took my personal relationship with Vladimir Putin. I'm the one who's giving Ukraine heavy weapons. He didn't say it, but, you know, I'm the one who's putting more troops on the Russian border and strengthening NATO. So, you know, it is a kind of she hammered away at this stuff about Putin. She hammered away at this stuff about Kim Jong-un. You know, oh, this is a terrible guy. He's a dictator. Putin has been assassinating people. It was amazing because the last time someone did that during the election, when someone assassinated someone, and Trump said, yeah, well, we do too. They hated that. He didn't quite go that far this time. But, you know, it's just all over the place. And it's the worst kind of dialogue between someone who, you know, half the time doesn't understand what he's saying and someone who's really trying to push him into, you know, the worst kind of militaristic exceptionalist, sanctimonious, we're the good guys and they're the bad guys paradigm.
Dave Lindorf, you know, I'm thinking about Leslie Stahl too. You know, remember way back when she was interviewing Madeleine Albright, who was the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. and then Secretary of State? And Leslie Stahl discovered somebody finally got, maybe one of Ramsey Clark's letters finally landed on her desk, where she learned that, you know, 500,000 children under the age of five had perished as a result of U.S.-U.N. economic sanctions, mostly kids under the age of five.
Well, basically, the ban on chlorine for purifying water was the big one.
Yeah, and let me just say what she said to Madeleine Albright. She said, a 500,000 kids dead. That's more than were killed in Hiroshima. Is the price worth it? And Madeleine Albright said, well, that's a tough question, but yes, the price is worth it. Yeah, the price of 500,000 children. And again, you can just kind of skip along to the next question. Like, if you have a government official saying, yeah, killing 500,000 babies because we don't like their government is worth it. Anyway, it's the vapidness of the American media. Go ahead. And of course, the government officials.
And of course, the American public that puts up with it and listens to it and then believes it.
I don't blame the masses of people because they're being spoon-fed their information by corporate-owned media. But go ahead.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, people have become dumped down by our underfunded education system so that they don't have any kind of critical thinking. I mean, that's always the biggest one for me. I mean, I spent years in China, and I've always found that, you know, even, you know, Chinese workers on the street or you know, peasants in the countryside seem to have a better grasp of what's going on in the world than, you know, my fellow Americans when I come home.
They're not as exceptional as Americans. They're not as exceptionally ignorant of world events.
Well, they're not. It's not only that. There's a certain level of critical thinking when you live in a dictatorship because you learn that, you know, what the authorities tell you isn't the truth, and so you question everything. And whereas here, there's a kind of, even though people say, oh, well, politicians lie and everything, they believe them, in, you know, when it comes down to it.
Jim Kavanaugh, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to say there's also, I mean, the level of political education, general education, but specifically in this case, political education is so bad in the country. But one of the things that does it is that there seems to be a debate. It's not, it looks like there's not just one line. There's Donald Trump, and look, there's Leslie Stahl, and they're having this fierce argument. So everybody gets involved in that argument and thinks they're getting involved in a profound political debate in which there are two opposite, you know, polar opposite sides to choose between them. And we have to, this is really important. So everybody does it. It's not as if there's just one, it doesn't look like there's just one line coming out from the government. It looks like, oh, there are these, there's Sean Hannity and there's, you know, Rachel Maddow, and these are terribly different things.
Yeah, no, I just got a graphic sent to me on why we must vote for Democrats in November, and it listed all the differences between the Republicans and the Democrats. And, you know, there were certain ones, you know, so one supports gay marriage, one doesn't, one supports abortion rights, one doesn't. Some of those things are absolutely true, but then it said that, you know, Republicans support dictators and Democrats support democracies. And what? No, you know, the Democrats have been pretty solid in supporting Saudi Arabia down the years, and now they support LCC in Egypt, and you can go down this long list, you know, of Marcos in the Philippines and on and on. There's nothing exceptional about Democrats supporting democracies. They support Hernandez in Honduras, who, you know, inherited the coup there of an elected, you know, populist worker, pro-worker leader, and on and on. It's not at all true. And then they said, you know, Republicans oppose universal health care and Democrats support it. No, they don't.
Yeah, no, they don't. When the Democrats had control of the House, the Senate, and the White House in 2009 and 2010, they could do whatever they wanted to do, and they did whatever they wanted to do, and it didn't include giving health care for everybody and certainly didn't include single payer. I want to play another audio clip. And since we're talking about how inane and how low, what a low level this interview was, I think the next clip will take us right down the same path. This is Leslie Stahl asking about James Mad Dog Mattis's position within the Trump cabinet. Let's listen.
What about General Mattis? Is he going to leave?
Well, I don't know. He hasn't told me that. I have a very good relationship with him. I had lunch with him 2 days ago. I have a very good relationship with him. It could be that he is. I think he's sort of a Democrat, if you want to know the truth. But General Mattis is a good guy. We get along very well. He may leave. I mean, at some point, everybody leaves. Everybody. People leave. That's Washington.
People leave. People die. Life goes on. The seasons change. That's really profound, Jim Kavanaugh. I mean, but of course, you know, Mattis isn't really a true Trumpster. He's not in the Trump camp. He is the Pentagon. And what's interesting to me is that the Pentagon's anti-China and anti-Russia reorientation, the national security strategy, which is mainly now targeting China, by the way, more than Russia.
This week.
No, but I think this is going to be going forward. I think it's not just this week. I think it's going to be the new thing. And it's not ephemeral. It's not transitory. It's going to be like a locked in position. It dovetails with Trump. So Mattis is kind of, it seems to me, kind of tolerating Trump's antics and weirdness, because in fact, the political positions are about the same. And Trump, who he characterizes Mattis, or before that, McMaster or John Kelly, my generals, he's giving the Pentagon, and with complete support from the Democrats, so much money. I mean, it's a military expansion unlike anything in the past 30 years. Go ahead.
Yeah, more than they asked for. By $80 billion or so, or $60, $80 billion. And it's true. I mean, Mattis may be a Democrat. I mean, there are enough military Democrats running around. And the Democrats, as you say, support this huge military budget. They support the 800 military bases around the world. They're running all kinds of military and intelligence veterans as candidates because that's what they are. And so, you know, again, you know, Trump has, as you say, it's to a certain extent, there's a conflict between the stability and the care with which the deep state Pentagon version of the Pentagon annex of the deep state wants to run things, and the complete, you know, impetuousness and inconsistency with Donald Trump runs things. So there's always going to be that with Donald Trump, whoever's going to be the Secretary of Defense. But, you know, Mattis is no hero. You know, whether he's a Democrat or not doesn't really make any difference.
Dave Lindorf, 1 minute, your final words.
Well, it's worth remembering that historically the Democrats have been the party of war. You know, the Bush family, you know, George and H.W. and W. both worked very hard to try to rescue that for that moniker for the Republicans. But really, most wars, World War I, World War II, Korean War, Vietnam War, have been Democratic wars. The big ones have been Democratic wars, started by Democrats, promoted by Democrats. And it was Ronald Reagan who was really trying to de-escalate the tensions and war threats with Russia, and Nixon who tried to de-escalate things with the Chinese. It was the Democrats that were, you know, promoting more conflict, more antagonism and dangers.
Yeah, we're going to leave it there. Reagan did successfully, triumphantly conquer Grenada.
And Panama, no? Oh, no, that was H.W.
Yeah. So they went after, like, countries that, like in the case of Grenada, had a population of 220,000. But somehow the American military, within days, succeeded at toppling the government.
They even defeated the Cuban construction workers at the airport. I mean, it was a brilliant victory.
Yeah, and they killed a whole bunch of them. We're out of time. That was Dave Lindorf. He's an investigative reporter and founder of This Can't Be Happening, as well as a columnist for Counterpunch and a contributor to Business Week, The Nation, Extra, and Salon.com. And we were joined from New York by Jim Kavanaugh. He is the editor of thepolemicist.net. You're listening to Loud and Clear. Stay with us.
Loud and Clear.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Loud and Clear.
Welcome back to Loud and Clear. I'm Brian Becker.
And I'm John Kiriakou.
It's Monday, and that means it's our weekly half-hour segment called Technology Rules with Chris Garafa, a weekly guide on how monopoly corporations and the national surveillance state are threatening cherished freedoms, civil rights, and civil liberties. We are joined from New Haven, Connecticut, by web developer and technologist Chris Garafa. Chris, welcome back.
Hey, Brian and John. Good to be back.
Well, Chris, a lot to talk about. Let's start again. We talked a little bit last week, but we'll say a few more words. I mean, we're witnessing a new era because Facebook, but now it's Twitter. It's obviously coordinated. There is a purge going on of alternative media. sites are being taken down. If it was the government, as we said last week, taking this down, people could go to court. They could fight back. It would be an infringement on the First Amendment. But because these are private corporations doing it at the behest of or in league with the government, they're shielded because it's not a First Amendment claim. Nonetheless, it is a suppression of free speech rights. Go ahead, Chris.
Sure. So let's catch folks up who may not have seen what happened last week. So last week, Facebook announced that they were taking down over 800 pages and personal accounts of people that they accuse of using, you know, kind of spammy techniques or multiple accounts to get likes and views on Facebook. The issue is most of these pages, the majority of them, were political in some way. There were both right-wing and left-wing accounts. Some of them include police accountability pages, like Cop Block and Police the Police, which often report on police brutality and Know Your Rights information. Reverb Press is another one. And there was really no proof. And of course, Facebook didn't provide any proof about this. But what we've also seen over the last few days now is that Twitter seems to be coordinating with Facebook. Now, they won't say that officially, but many of the same accounts that were removed from Facebook have now been removed from Twitter. One of the most prominent ones would be Reverb Press, but also Right Wing News. So this seems to be a very coordinated attack on political pages on both, again, the right and the left that are not falling in line with any mainstream U.S. press perspectives.
Yeah, that, you know, this is what's dangerous, too, is that almost as if by magic, Twitter then banned almost all of the same groups from its platform.
And we're talking about people who had built up millions of followers.
Millions of followers. You and I were talking about this last week, Brian. At least a dozen of those sites I follow every day for news. I mean, tell me, what's wrong with Cop Block or Police the Police? Nothing. I mean, these are legitimate websites and platforms that document police abuses and seek to disseminate the information. You know, just because Mark Zuckerberg doesn't like their politics isn't enough of a reason to ban them as fake news from Facebook and then to have Twitter follow for no apparent reason.
And because it is such a suppression, they need a little credibility. So they use third-party filters like the Atlanta Council to say,
exactly,
oh, look, we've investigated and this is bad. These people are fake news. And again, they don't have to explain themselves, no. Chris. They just say, oh, it's a violation of terms of service.
Right. And, you know, if they're really going after clickbait, well, you know, Mashable is still up. BuzzFeed is still up. And yeah, I'm not asking for them to be taken down, but it's clearly that the clickbait is just a cover for what they're saying. You know, clickbait is most of the news these days. You never get the story in the title or the summary. You always have to, you know, dig into it. That's why it's called clickbait. They get you to click the story. So they're getting ad views and page views. But it was very transparent that this was not actually about clickbait.
Let's go on to some of the other stories. Undercover cops break Facebook's rule to track protesters. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is a very regular occurrence, really. This is coming from NBC News, actually. But effectively, when people get a Facebook friend request, unless you are standing next to that person when they send it to you and they confirm, you don't know who that person is. That person could be a police officer. In this article, they talk about the police in the summer of 2015 in Memphis, Tennessee, when there was a police murder, which was certainly covered going back on Cop Block and Police the Police. People found out about it through those pages as well as others. People started getting a friend request from a guy named Bob Smith. And it's a generic name. His profile picture was a Guy Fawkes mask. And then he started sending messages to people who had been involved in these protests, who, you know, to try to get information about them, about future events that were coming up, about planning meetings and things like that. And it turns out that he was a detective in the Memphis Police Officers Department of Homeland Security. So he was actually a cop. His name is Tim Reynolds, and we found out about this through the American Civil Liberties Union of Tennessee, who actually sued the police department for violating laws that prevent, you know, surveillance of protest. So people need to be careful about who they're adding on Facebook, and particularly what they're posting and what they're saying to people that they don't know. People add, you know, movement folks all the time, you know, from all across the country, all across the world. And even if you have others vouch for them, just because you have many friends in common doesn't mean that that person is legitimate or who your friends think they are. It's a very frequent and regular thing that this happens.
All right, let's go into another story. We have so many. Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance builds coalition to counter China.
Well, this goes into what we've been talking about with China, especially for the past few weeks, after Pence's speech, you know, condemning China, after these allegations that China has been in the, you know, infiltrating the supply chain, which we've talked about is just completely bunk. The Five Eyes Alliance, so that's the U.S., New Zealand, Britain, Australia, and Canada. And this is a longtime alliance between these five countries to do electronic surveillance. And so they're basically surveilling all of the internet traffic, the phone traffic, all electronic communications going through these nations and others. These countries are now partnering with Germany and Japan and possibly a few other Western European countries to spy effectively on China's internal political situation, right? So they're working on, they're spying on China while they're claiming that China is spying on the U.S. This is just goes back to that hypocrisy. Every time the U.S. is spying on another country, it's business as usual. But if that country is accused of spying on the United States or an ally, then it's a big front page story, right? So again, this is just part and parcel of this anti-China campaign. You know, claiming that China is somehow trying to infiltrate or affect the 2018 elections that are coming up in just a few weeks.
That's true. I wanted to comment on that, Chris. It's no secret that the Five Eyes countries that you pointed out, the US, the UK, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, spy on the likes of Russia and China, that they announced it and announced a more robust program is very unusual. And I think that what we're going to see is, at least here in the United States, a request to Congress to spend even more money spying on the Chinese. And it'll be couched in terms of the Chinese being a threat in several different ways, whether it's politically, militarily, economically, through trade, through aid. I mean, the Chinese are successfully buying relationships all across Africa. And that's something that we don't have the political will, the political backbone, or even really the money to do. So this is our reaction to that. I think the next real fight, the next really difficult relationship is going to be with China.
I agree. And this is very much trying to counter the growing influence that China has in Africa, for sure, because it's working on, you know, fair trade deals with many African nations, but also with Western European countries. Trump's, you know, America First has kind of shaken some of these Western European countries like Germany, like France, like others about, you know, being afraid of, you know, what trade deals could or could not be, you know, coming through down the pipe. And so this is an effort to strengthen the U.S. relationship with those countries. Absolutely. The one thing I do want to say about this real quick, too, is that if these, you know, this actually can affect American citizens and the citizens of these other Five Eyes countries very directly, because they're going to be monitoring content, internet content coming in and out of China. But if your internet content, if your web browsing session happens to bounce through a server in China.
Yeah, good point.
And then come back into the U.S., they consider that to be fair game. And that is considered international, not national communications. And that's been, the NSA actually has, you know, internally said that in the past. And so they could be using this to spy on American citizens.
Let's go on to another story. There's so many good ones. Where do you want to go next, Chris?
Well, you know, Brian and John, I've been a little sick recently, you know, just a fall cold. And I'm lucky that I don't have an Amazon Echo, one of those, you know, cylinders in my home, because Amazon has patented some technology that can tell if you're sick or depressed and then sell you medication, play ads for medication based on your voice. So, you know, I'm a little stuffy right now. I've had a little cold. So Amazon, if it heard, you know, if this Echo device heard me and they, if they go through with this patent, it could actually tell that I'm sick try to figure out what I have, and then maybe try to sell me some Robitussin or something and play a targeted ad for me for medication. An even scarier thing is that they're going to try to tell you what your emotional state is. So if they hear crying, they're going to potentially recommend therapists or anti-depression medications.
We're just at the beginning of this. Just think about what where this is going to be.
Yeah, this is iRobot.
Yeah, with artificial intelligence, say in 10 years, because the technology is advancing exponentially, not, you know, like slowly and incrementally. It's going in such a dynamic way.
At least when the light turns from blue to red, we know that we have to fight the robots.
Yeah, that's it. That's going to be our signal. The robots say we have a cold to the barricades.
This is not good. You know, and who was it? Was it Stephen Hawking that warned us against artificial intelligence right before he died? I think it was Stephen Hawking. But the guy's right. Whoever it was that said it is right. This is not helpful. This is dangerous. This is an invasion of privacy.
And it's all for profit.
Because
they want to sell you things. They want to sell you things. We are actually the product now. We are the commodity. So all of these gadgets, which are supposedly allowing us to talk to our families and our friends and build an online community, or to have a useful artificial intelligence Alexa or Echo around the house, they're actually just surveillance systems so that what we do and think and feel and might buy are known by corporate entities who want to sell things.
And there's already a legal precedent where the cops can subpoena your Alexa and ask Alexa what you were searching for, what questions you were asking, and Alexa says, "Oh, he asked me to give directions to build a bomb."
I always thought Alexa was a snitch.
She is a snitch. She's a rat, and you know how rats are treated.
Anyway, Chris, let's go on.
All right. I just do want to make one more point about that. We've talked in the past about Google and other companies sharing your health data with insurance companies. So nothing's preventing Amazon from doing the same. So it's basically putting a insurance company bureaucrat in your home, effectively.
I think we need to have a caveat. John, you were not actually threatening physical harm against Alexa.
No, and I did not say snitches get stitches.
Okay, exactly. All right. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, let's go over to the EU, where Twitter is being investigated by Irish privacy authorities. Now, so when you see somebody post a link on Twitter and you click that link, it looks like you're just going directly to the link that the person posted. You're actually going through a couple layers of Twitter analytics before you get to that page. Twitter owns a domain name called t.co. which basically just does analytics on who you are and what link you clicked. Now, they say this is for security, that they're checking the links, for viruses, for malware, and all of that. But it's actually, it is just analytics. Now, Twitter, again, is just saying that they are going through and doing this for security purposes, but they are being investigated by the EU because the EU has much stronger privacy rights than we do in the United States. They have the General Data Protection Regulation, which went into effect on May 25th of this year, which says that people have the right to, first of all, not be tracked, to opt out of tracking, and also to request an archive of everything that an online company knows about them. And Twitter won't hand over the information about that they're getting from you when you click on one of these links, and you can't opt out of this link tracking system. They don't provide any way to do that. So Twitter could be facing some pretty serious fines if they're found guilty of this.
Let's go on to another story. Again, there's just so many. I really want to cover them. John Deere just swindled farmers out of their right to repair. Talk about that story. That's in Wired magazine.
This is coming out of Wired. So the right to repair is a pretty simple concept. You go and you buy a device and you should be able to fix it. You should be able to modify it. You should be able to change it. Just, you know, anything. Except John Deere and others don't think that you should be able to do that. They think that you should have to rely on them, meaning pay them, to repair your own tractor, for example. And so this has been a big thing out in California recently, where a California farmers lobbying group, which is actually really just representing the large agricultural device manufacturers, has won a ruling effectively that removes the right to repair from from farmers. This is focusing mostly on John Deere tractors, but other farm equipment as well. So what this means is that the farmers have to rely on John Deere to get the parts to replace if something breaks on their tractor. There can't be third-party parts. The farmers can't get access to or modify the code that drives their tractors. They're basically stuck inside this walled garden that John Deere has created. This is a very scary thing, especially when we think about how much technology is all around our lives and in all of the devices that we're using these days. We should have the right, just, you know, as we almost always have before this modern advent of, you know, all of this advanced technology, to take apart our devices, to change them, to repair them without having to rely on a third-party company after we've bought the device. If you buy it, it should be yours.
Totally. Yeah, it should be yours.
And just, not everybody knows who John Deere is, but John Deere is the corporation that's making tractors, right, and harvesting machines, big equipment, mm-hmm, right? That's what we're talking about. I mean, you can't engage in modern farming in America without John Deere, or there's not many corporations like John Deere.
And that equipment is not cheap. In many cases, each piece costs more than a house.
Yeah.
So if it breaks down and you have to essentially just throw it away, we're talking about a lot of money.
Yeah. And of course, it intensifies the same trend that we see in farming, which is the small farmer gets, yep, knocked out. The small farmer gets knocked out if it's a bad harvest. The, yep, small farmer gets knocked out if, say, the U.S. government imposes sharp tariffs on Chinese goods and China retaliates by not buying certain agricultural products from the United States. The big business, the agribusiness, the farming that's really industrial-type farming and the farming that's fused with the biggest banks, they weather, and the biggest corporations, they weather the storm. And so they eliminate the competition. It's actually, when some farmers go out of business, it's good for monopolization in the agricultural sector, which is a huge, huge sector. Let's go on to another story, Chris.
Okay, this is a big, big personal privacy issue here. The federal government, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Homeland Security Investigations Department have basically said that they are allowed to attach a GPS tracking device to your car, not just a car, but a commercial vehicle, a tractor trailer, and even an airplane, to track you for an unlimited amount of time. And they can do this without a warrant or without, quote, individualized suspicion. Now, they're quoting this based on what's called the Border Doctrine, which is a limitation to the Fourth Amendment that says that you have fewer Fourth Amendment protections under when you're in within 100 miles of a U.S. border. That is almost the vast majority of the population of the United States lives within 100 miles of the U.S. border. And so the Homeland Security is effectively saying that you can be tracked in your truck, your car, even an airplane, without your knowledge, and there's no justification that they need to make to do it.
The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. That's the Fourth Amendment. It means the government can't do a fishing expedition. They can't come into your car, your home, supposedly your communications, search them or seize them and search them and see if you've done something wrong or look for something. So, you know, construct a case against you. This stops the unfettered power of the government. It takes away the government's power to have unfettered discretion in terms of how it takes care of its own interactions with you, the individual person. So now the Fourth Amendment apparently doesn't apply. We don't know how many million people. It's tens of millions, maybe more than 100 million people who live within 100 miles of a U.S. border. They no longer enjoy the Fourth Amendment in effect.
And, you know, in many states, this is already illegal. I know that in the state of Virginia, for example, it is illegal even for a spouse to put a tracking device. But in most states, it's illegal. And now the feds can do it with impunity. And then we have no recourse.
And let's be clear, when they talk about U.S. borders, they're not just talking about the U.S.-Mexico border or the U.S.-Canada border. This also includes the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans, the Gulf of Mexico. So they're considering, yes, absolutely, they consider those to be, you know, U.S. borders. And so, you know, all of California, the West Coast, the entire East Coast, and then, you know, and the Southeast as well are covered in this.
That's disgraceful.
U.K. War Games cyber attack on Moscow. What's that story?
Wow. So we know war games are when a country simulates an attack on another country. This is often used for planning, but it's often also used for intimidation. This happens in cyber war as well. And so what happened here is the UK has been practicing for a cyber attack on Russia that could effectively take over their entire infrastructure and shut it down or modify it. So their infrastructure from electricity to transportation to everything. And this is something that they're doing out in the open. It's a very clear way for them to intimidate Russia and play up on the anti-Russia sentiment. Now, they're saying that some of the things that they would do this in response to would be Russian intervention in Libya to gain control of oil reserves, or seizing small islands belonging to Estonia to, quote, test whether NATO is serious about its Article 5 clause, right? So they're saying effectively that it would be wrong for Russia to intervene in Libya, but of course there was no word here about how the U.S. and NATO effectively went in and destroyed Libya 7 years ago.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, airplanes coming from the U.K. Air Force drop bombs on Libya.
That's right.
I mean, lots of bombs, along with the French and along with the United States. They were bombing Libya. They were trying to destroy, and they did destroy, the sovereign government of Libya, the country in Africa that has the largest oil reserves of any other country in Africa. They bombed the country. They overthrew the regime. And now the new government, which is, you know, Libya is basically in chaos, but the new government is having diplomatic relations, as the Gaddafi government did, with other countries, including Russia. So that becomes the pretext to carry out, well, these are offensive cyber techniques, war against Russia. I mean, Russia, when they read this story, and of course they are reading it, it's not a secret now, what does Russia do? They have to respond in kind. I mean, we go into an arms race in cyber war.
That's right, and it is going to cause an arms race in cybersecurity. Russia will be responding to this, and I believe they have every right to. They have every right to defend themselves, whether it's from a conventional military attack or a cyber attack. If Russia is attacked in this way, it could cause absolute havoc in the cities and in the countryside for average Russian citizens, and they should be able to defend themselves. And we should mention too that it's not often talked about, but the Dutch government is very involved in this as well. No one really thinks about the Dutch government these days as being, you know, a major player on the world scene, but the Dutch government actually works very closely with the U.S. and with the British on attacking on cyber attacks on Russia on a regular basis. And so that's something to pay attention to as well.
I wonder what the reaction would be right now if we learned that Russia was openly more or less advertising that they were carrying out simulated war, cyber war, against the United States and against the U.K. I'm trying to understand or guess what the reaction might be.
Everybody flipped out when a year ago the North Koreans released a video that showed missiles exploding over Washington and New York, and that was just a made-up video. So imagine if there were legitimate war games being played right now. We would go crazy.
Of course we would. Of course. When I say we, I don't mean we.
I mean our country.
The government that speaks in our name.
That's right.
Let's go on. We have 3 minutes left, Chris. Let's go to our next story.
Okay. So this one is from Bloomberg Opinion. It says, "No, Google, we did not consent to this." So people might have heard recently Google had shut down its Google Plus social network. Some people were surprised to see that it was actually still active at that point. It was not a successful project on Google's part. But it turns out that there was a way for hackers to get into the system and take a large amount of information from Google Plus users. So Google kept this private. They didn't announce it. It was months before they announced it and shut it down. And so it was a very serious thing and a very serious breach. And it's not clear still if anyone actually did get into the service, but there was a way to get into it. And it's very concerning. That Google waited so long to just even announce this and then take the step to shut down the service. So this article basically is pointing out how Google should be held responsible for waiting so long to let the public know what happened.
Chris, we have 2 minutes left. In the next 60 seconds, tell us about the story. To deter foreign hackers, some states may also be deterring voters. 60 seconds, then we want to hear your technology tip for the week.
Okay, so this story is coming out of NPR, and they did some testing and found that a number of states that allow you to register to vote online actually will reject your request to register if it doesn't look like you're coming from inside the United States. Now, any American citizen who lives anywhere in the world, if you're an American citizen, you still have the right to vote, but they're actually blocking IP addresses, which can give away where you are, that are coming from outside the United States, which is that's a huge violation of rights. And it can be very difficult to rectify that, especially if you're living overseas.
All right, we have 60 seconds left. Chris, I wanted to ask you about the technology that sets off car alarms because we hear one right in the background. But let's go on with your technology tip for the week.
Well, in the wake of the Google Plus leak, I just want to encourage people to figure out what accounts you have, that thing you signed up for, you know, years ago that maybe you haven't signed into in a long time. Go and look back through your email for all those registration confirmation emails and think about what accounts you have and do you really still need them, and try to delete them and deactivate them if you're not using them. Because that way there's just fewer ways for people, for hackers or even these companies, to get in and get your data. Go clear out your account and then delete it.
All right. That was Chris Garofa. We talk to Chris every Monday in this segment called Technology Rules with Chris Garofa, a weekly guide on how monopoly corporations in the national surveillance state are threatening cherished freedoms, civil rights, and civil liberties. Stay with us. You're listening to Loud and Clear.
Loud and Clear.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.